Hi there, Dr. B here with your modules 3 and 4 clarifying lecture. This term has been one of my most challenging for getting work back to people. And so I apologize that things and your feedback has been so late. Hopefully working with Terrell is gonna help that a little bit. And I know that she's available for help if you so need it. So do take advantage of the things that she can provide. I will say that it is absolutely critical that you follow the directions in your work, because that's going to make things work a whole lot faster. Blackboard is very complicated on the back end. So, when something is in the directions and you're looking at it, you're going, that can't possibly matter. It's there because it does. So as Terrell is checking your inner teaching, make sure that you have everything in one place, because your feedback will get back to you that much faster. Sometimes you see professors sometimes say, oh, you're gonna need this, and you know, this is really important, and then you never see it again, right? Like, you know, I don't know, calculus or something like that. But this course really does lay the foundation for everything else you're going to do for the next 6 courses. So when we say you gotta know this, you gotta know it right, and you gotta know it cold, we really do mean it. You're gonna see this again and again and again. This is the stuff that really is going to make or break you when it comes to the exam. So please take our feedback seriously. Please make sure that you are reviewing these terms and that you know them cold, because you will see them again and again and again. Another reason why I'm so strict with things, and I just wrote a LinkedIn post about this, is that when we're sloppy with our terms and we say certain things like reinforcing a person, or saying that, you know, reinforcement is what we do to, you know, see the behavior we want or get what we want from somebody else, we look coercive, and we look like we are out to manipulate people, that we're out to change people, that we're out to make them something that they're not. And we're not. We change socially significant behavior, one behavior at a time, and that we're not out to change people because we can't. We can change specific behavior that benefits them and benefits the society at large. So make sure that you are very strict with your terms too, and that you're talking about behavior analysis as it is, not watering it down to make it more digestible, okay? All right, inner teach, module 3, module 4. Make sure Terrell's gonna be checking your work for attendance and collaboration, so make sure you have that documentation there. Points are gonna start being taken off if you do not have that. Remember that things like reinforcement and punishment aren't procedures, and they're not interventions, they're phenomena. So when you get to 622, you're gonna hear this more and more and more, that these things are kind of laws of behavior that you will see that affect everything that we do. So, you know, think about like positive reinforcement or 3-term contingency like a cell. And that cell is the building block of organs. Organs are the building blocks to the body. What you're learning here is the basics. When you get to 622, it's even gonna look more like bio and chem and physics. But these are not interventions. They're not things we do to people, okay? Sometimes we, you know, make changes to the environment to help individuals engage in more socially appropriate behavior. But we're not doing things to people, and that's really important. I know that the book, and a lot of books, use that term desired behavior. I really hate it. And I'll tell you why I hate it. Because first of all, what are we desiring? That just sounds weird. But also it sounds like, you know, who's in charge here? You know, I desire this behavior, so therefore you are going to do it. And that's not how this all works. Okay, we're not out to manipulate people, change people. We're using the science of behavior to change specific behavior. I prefer the term target behavior over desired behavior personally. And that's your extra credit. Why do I dislike the term desired behavior, and what would I like you to use instead? Interval schedules is the first response after the passage of time. So whatever happens in an interval schedule is that you set a timer. So let's say it's a 2 minute timer. Whatever happens within those 2 minutes doesn't matter, okay? At all, you're not looking at it. What you're looking for is when that timer beeps, that if that individual engages in that response, then it is reinforced, okay? So it's kind of like catching a bus. It doesn't matter when you get to the bus stop. What matters is that you get to the bus stop when the bus is pulling up. So that is an interval schedule. It's more like a VI interval. It's supposed to be an FI. It's more like a VI. So remember, the first response after the passage of time is reinforced. Don't try to get fancy or psychological or use explanatory fictions. All this is a relationship between a stimulus and the behavior that precedes it, okay? And it's not necessarily favorable or desirable. I'm seeing a lot of people using the term positive to mean favorable, desirable, good. No, okay? Any behavior can be positively reinforced if a stimulus is added to the environment. And that stimuli can make us miserable. As long as behavior increases, behavior is being positively reinforced. So you don't have to like it. You don't have to be aware of it. You don't have to build your self-esteem with it. We don't do that. Those are explanatory fictions. Check the document that I put, I think in module 2, might be module 3, that explains common explanatory fictions and why. Print that out as you write your inner teach. It'll be much, much more helpful to you. Antecedent versus consequence. I'm seeing some confusion between the two. Antecedent are those things that come before a response. Okay, so motivating operations, discriminative stimuli, consequences, reinforcement and punishment come after a response. Antecedent before, consequence after. Negative reinforcement is not punishment. So make sure that you understand the two. Negative reinforcement increases responding by terminating or preventing contact with an aversive stimulus. Okay? Punishment is either introducing a reinforcing stimulus or taking away, positive punishment is the introduction of an aversive stimulus, or it can be the taking away of a reinforcing stimulus that causes behavior to go down. Okay, so the ticket example is that your variable ratio schedule of reinforcement for driving the speed limit, your behavior, I should say. Ooh, I made that mistake. Extra credit. What mistake did Dr. B make? That your behavior, driving the speed limit, is on variable ratio schedule of reinforcement, and speeding is on a punishment schedule. In this case, negative punishment, because money is taken away. As you saw, I made the mistake. Easy to do. You cannot reinforce or punish people-only responses. Because remember, if you are reinforcing and punishing people, you are changing people. Okay, you're increasing the likelihood that that person occurs again in the future. You can only reinforce or punish a specific response. Okay, you also can't gain or lose reinforcement. I see people saying gaining attention or losing attention. You know, that makes it sound like it's a commodity, and it's not a commodity. It's a relationship. It isn't about, you know, the person who dies with the most reinforcers wins or something like that. What it means is that there are stimuli that are added or removed from the environment that increase or decrease the likelihood of responding. So they aren't things, you know, so you can't gain or lose them. They just exist. Okay. And intent doesn't matter. Okay. Intent does not matter. It doesn't matter if someone intends to go get a reinforcer or they're quote unquote seeking something. Those things do not matter. Okay. What matters is what happens to behavior when environment changes. And again, you don't have to use this as an intervention for it to happen. You are watching this video because something about it is reinforcing to your watching. So watching is being reinforced by something. What that is, I don't know. When you sit down on your couch and you sit in your favorite chair, why do you do that? Well, because sitting on that favorite chair is being reinforced by some process, some stimulus in the environment. What it is, I don't know. When you get into your car, the time you get into your car is reinforced by stimuli in the environment. So try to get away from looking at this as something that we do as an intervention, and more like, these are the things that happen all around us, and sometimes we can harness that energy to make improvements in people's lives. Okay, that's really more of what we do than what sometimes we say we do. Why is that important? Well, there's a lot of critics of behavior analysis out there, and some of it is because either A, we've been sloppy with our terms, and so we've kind of made behavior analysis look like something it isn't. Or B, we're not fully understanding what behavior analysis really is, and therefore using it incorrectly, and harnessing the energy incorrectly. You know, you can either, with medicine, with biology, you know, you can either use it to cure cancer, or you can use it, you know, like Dr. Frankenstein. Same here. So if we don't get this in the way that it works, we run the risk of using it incorrectly and harnessing the energies incorrectly. And therefore, sometimes, like when we say things like persons having behaviors, oh gosh, I hope so, because if they're not, they're dead. If behavior is everything we do, if we're not doing anything at all, we're dead. And so try to get away from things like we're having behaviors here. First of all, you can't have a behavior. Behavior is a response. It's just a thing that happens. Can't have any of that. So what we want to say is that, you know, behavior is not appropriate to the context. Or that it's, you know, that behavior has been, it deemed by society as something that is distasteful. And that helps you, too, to kind of stay neutral about the whole idea that behavior is everything, anything that we do, and you're not layering judgments about it. Let's talk a little bit about non-contingent reinforcement. So non-contingent reinforcement, all it is that it is reinforcers delivered based upon the passage of time, okay? There is no response requirement whatsoever. When this video ends regardless of what you do, okay? When the bell rings regardless of what you do. When the light turns green regardless of what you do. Okay, so this is regardless of what any organism does, the reinforcer is delivered. Okay, and that breaks the response reinforcer relationship. I will say this about functions of behavior, and I'm getting to Inner Teach Module 4. I prefer the term automatic to sensory. Because our sensory systems are the way that we detect stimuli in behavior analysis. So there's something called signal detection you'll learn about in 622, where, you know, we see something, we act on it. In precision teaching, they call them learning channels. We hear something, we act on it. We taste something, we act on it. We touch something, we act on it. That's what sensory is. So I like automatic better, because automatic says that some biological process that occurs under the skin is reinforcing behavior, which is really actually more technically correct. So some biological process, whether it's a chemical release or muscle contraction or whatever it is, that is reinforcing that response. Something to keep in mind, some of you have written the term when I'm a BCBA. Please, 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 please do not do that, because the BCBA, BACB, RBT, all those things, they are registered trademarks and they are strictly, strictly enforced by the Behavior Analyst Certification Board. So if you're not putting that TM after it, you run the risk of being in trademark violation. What are the chances that they're gonna see our InterTeach? Probably low, but I will say that they did call me out about 15 years ago, and they found something that was pretty obscure. So make sure that you're not using BCBA, you're saying behavior analyst, okay? Remember that there are no such thing as punishments and reinforcements, okay? Punishment is a process, reinforcement is a process. You have punishers and reinforcers, okay? I don't know why the book says this, but you cannot do extinction and NCR at the same time, because extinction is the discontinuation of reinforcement. Non-contingent reinforcement is the delivery of reinforcers contingent upon the passage of time. So you're either delivering reinforcers or you're not. If you're not, it's extinction. If you're doing it based on time, then it's NCR. So you can't do the two together, and I'm not sure exactly where they're coming from with that. The example of the prison is actually verbally governed. Why is it verbally governed? Excuse me. Will function eventually, hopefully, as negative reinforcement. So why is it verbally governed? Because there is a rule. The prisoners are hearing, if you read books and you pedal your bike, you will get out of prison faster. They have not contacted that contingency yet, so it may happen, it may not. But they are working with that rule. So that is a verbally governed, that is a rule-governed behavior, okay? Again, positive means to add and negative means to subtract. Think about behavior analysis as math and bio. Don't think about it as psychology. And this is one of the questions that I heard this week. Positive is add, negative is subtract. We don't put value judgments on behavior. As behavior analysts, there's no such thing as somebody being bad. There's no such thing as somebody being good. There's no such thing as bad behavior. There's no such thing as good behavior. There's no such thing as a positive experience or a negative experience. This is a layer of rule that we as society put on things. Okay, and that is very, very, very important. Punishment is a process. So you can't say that X is a punisher. Might be, might not be. For example, that person showed up at a stadium and as a result, when they showed up, they were given a number. So name goes away, number's given. And when they run up and down stairs really loudly, really fast, music is playing really loudly, and they have to lift heavy things and throw spears at a wall, and climb these walls. Sounds pretty aversive until I tell you that there's a medal at the end, and that's a Spartan race. Or I walk into a certain place, and as a result, I get punched. Sounds pretty aversive. Sounds like it should punish me. Punish me. Look, I did it again. Punish my behavior that I walked into that place. But I continued to do that. Why? Because I love being in karate tournaments. Going somewhere and being punched in the face is reinforcing my coming back. Okay? Now, do I love coming back and therefore it's a reinforcer? I just said that, but it's not true. Because I've gone into the karate ring, gotten punched, left crying. Yet I go back. So, getting punched in the karate ring is a positive reinforcer. This is why you cannot look at something and go, it looks like this, so therefore it's a reinforcer. They look happy, so therefore it's a reinforcer. Okay? The only way you can tell if something is a reinforcer or punisher is by looking at behavior change. If behavior goes up, it's a reinforcer or maintains. If behavior goes down, it's a punisher. So there's no way to know except to look at patterns. Okay? And that's really, really important. And based upon that, a lot of you were saying that prison is a punisher for the crime committed. Well, certainly, you know, that's what society would tell you. But there are people who go back to prison multiple times. And they will tell you sometimes they don't want to. I'm watching a series out of Australia, and one of the characters was in prison for involuntary manslaughter, and it was coming up on his release date, and he said he committed a crime that he actually didn't commit. Being in prison, that means being in prison was more reinforcing than being on the outside. Yeah, it's fiction, but it happens in everyday life too. So we can't say, oh, prison's punishing. We don't know. Yeah, depending on how aversive life on the outside was, it could be reinforcing to that, you know, that behavior, whatever behavior they're engaging in. So please do not look at something and go, you know, it looks like this, so it must be a positive reinforcer. Or that person looks happy, so it must be a positive reinforcer. Or that person's miserable, so it must be a punisher. You can only look at patterns of behavior in relationships. It's the only way you can know. Behaviorist bio, for the most part, stuff look good. Just remember that you need to define technical terms, and you got to keep an eye out for your APA style. Why are we sticklers for APA style? Who cares? APA style is a way to make sure that people get credit for their work. You wouldn't want somebody stealing your paper and turning it in as their own. If you are not citing people's work correctly, you're basically taking their work and turning it in as your own. So that's a problem, right? Not only, you know, to this level, is it, you know, honor code? Not necessarily. If you lift a sentence, that's plagiarism, that's an honor code violation. But you need to give credit where credit is due, and you do that through APA style. All right, questions. Could you go over behavioral contrast, positive and negative, in more depth? So contrast, really all it means is that a change in the environment in one condition affects behavior in another. So common one is behavior is reinforced in the classroom and it's not in at home. Okay. So I'm doing, you know, I'm going to allocate my responding even more so to the classroom and much less at home. Okay. That is one form of contrast. The other form of contrast that can happen is that both situations see an increase in responding. So if behavior is reinforced in one situation, not in the other, one of two things can happen. You can allocate all your responding and you have a burst of responding, you know, high responding in one condition and nothing in the other. Or it can bleed over to the other condition and you can have high responding in both. That is what contrast is, okay? The next question, in your clarifying lectures, you mentioned that we should stay away from terms like desired behavior or unwanted behavior because they come across as coercive. During my readings this week, I came across the term contextually inappropriate behavior and contextually appropriate behavior, which states that in some settings, certain behaviors are acceptable while not in others. For example, running around on a playground versus running around in a classroom when teachers are teaching. My question, and therefore, is, are these accepted terminologies to use in writings and conversations? Yes, because context, okay? Environmentally appropriate behavior means that that is something that is accepted in that environment. Contextually inappropriate behavior means that that is something that is not accepted within the environment. So we're now looking at this in an observable and measurable way. When we say we're desiring behavior, it's not really observable and measurable. Plus, we can come to consensus on what is appropriate and inappropriate, and if things change, we can still change what's inappropriate or appropriate. So let's say, you know, running around in a classroom is inappropriate, but sometimes it might be. So we're looking at something that's observable and measurable. Hopefully that helps to clarify. My question isn't based on module, but your clarifying lecture, which I get a lot of, by the way. Thank you. You said that ABA shouldn't be grouped with psychology or education, but it's mostly closely related to economics. I honestly thought it was most closely related to psychology. So can you please explain this? I found it very interesting. Thank you. Well, thank you again for your kind words. So if you look at positive and negative reinforcement, a lot of it is math. There's something called the Society for the Quantitative Analysis of Behavior, where they do a lot of mathematical models of behavior. And you'll see that a lot of the things like consumer behavior, routines, things like that, are really kind of more the domain of economics than psychology. When we're talking about psychology, we're talking about internal structures, the mind. We're talking about things that are happening under the skin. We're talking about things that might not be as observable and measurable. But when you get into economics, they're really talking about patterns of behavior and environment. So if you read stuff like Richard Thaler, who's one of the gurus of behavioral economics, you're going to see a lot of parallels to what we're doing in our courses. So really, their focus of patterns of the environment and how the environment influences behavior is more closely related to what we do than psychology is. So hopefully that's helpful. All right, thank you very much for your time. Hopefully you found all of my errors and you're going to tell me about them. Have a great week and we'll talk to you next week.